All the recollections for my school days started back about 1900. Grew up about 1900 when I was 5 years old. I started into the kindergarten, and a friend of mine, the boy that I played with, he and I started at the same time. And our mothers would take us one morning in a horse and buggy past the kindergarten. We'd stay at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they would take our lunches with us, fix up lunch, and we'd sit around in the little desk, and on top of the desk we'd go out and yard and put the weather. And one morning I had started it. We lived up on the corner. I was about the middle of the block, and I used to go up there getting a buggy with him, and his mother would take us that morning. So it had rained that night before, and a lot of mud was on the street with a curb in the big mud puddle. And well, it quit raining though, but I was waiting for him. He came out, and I had on a little white, maybe kind of a knee blouse thing, and of course the pants was up to my knees, I had them knee pants, back stockings and shoes. And he gave me a shell, and I went off into that mud puddle with both feet. And of course I let out a squall, calling for mother. She came and rescued me, and his mother came out. And at least we didn't have to go to school that day. We didn't have to go to kindergarten. And later on, we started going to the elementary school, in first grade in school. And we had a teacher there, and a hall teacher. She played piano. Everything had to march in the classroom, back and forth, sound of the music marching. And she had an old piano there that school that you had to pump with your feet there. It was pumped in air. And if you had to just keep pumping, if you stopped, the music just died out. So if you best boy, best, most of the girls didn't have to pump it, but the boys being the best one in the class would get to pump that bargain bar that day. And that was considered a big honor. So I got smart enough to pump it a couple of days, and then I lost out. And then from then on, we had a fairly good day in school, and I'd say, but in those days, it was 18, 19, was still in the 7th and 8th grade. It's like grown boys was been shaving for some time, and then we moved our school. The school where we were sitting was about, I had to walk at least 2 miles to that school. And so they built a new school within about 6 blocks of where I was living. So then we had transferred everybody in that neighborhood, transferred to that school. And I had the honor of being the first to get paddled in that school for stomping, trying the new floor out. And so my experiences went on up through life until I got old enough to want to be a soldier. So I joined the National Guard outfit there and was learning to drill and got to be a good shot with a rifle. And then we had to travel down the Poncho River. Person was on his way into Mexico at that time, and we were sent to the border of Eagle Pass, Texas, to do guard duty on the bridges and up and down the river. And some of the funny things that occurred while we were down there, which I recall now, for instance, we had what they call, came down the day of the 49. It was a carnival outfit that came down, and on Saturday we get journey that to the town in Eagle Pass. We was camped, our main camp was just a few miles out from the city limits there, just about a mile, rather, from the city limits. And what I recall most of all, the funniest thing, one of the funniest things, was that they had a snake charmer down there. And he sat in his tent there on the canvas all around him, had a bunch of snakes, and he'd pick them up and wrap them around his neck and let them pretend they're biting him, and it's like he was chewing on one or eating one of them. And we had an old boy in a company called Red Jones, and he said, I'm going to find out if he's really a snake charmer. So it was no trouble at all, just go right out camp there just a little distance and find a rattlesnake. We rented out there. It was always around the camp, it was always killing. And so we went out with him, and he caught a pretty good sized rattlesnake. We put him in a box, pasteboard box. That night we went down to the carnival, we carried him down, and he opened this box and dumped this rattler in there with this snake charmer. And the old rattlesnake hit there and turned into a claw and started them rattles, and that snake charmer came over the top of that tent and nothing fled. And they threw us out, made us believe the tent that he was in there, and they finally killed the rattler. And then we knew everybody knew it was a fake if it wasn't a real rattlesnake. And from then on, we didn't go back to the carnival anymore. But it didn't last more than about a week, and I don't think the snake business was too good after that. Then I recall we were sent to a ranch about 20 miles away called, I think it was a Blocker's Ranch, and the Indigo and the Blocker Ranch, so we were doing guard duty up and down the river there. And we went out using the four horse team, four mules and combat wagon, we called it, for a surprise to all out there. We put our tents up, and guard duty out there for about four weeks. And then broke camp and came back in, and we were on guard duty then, on bridge duty also. Then we had to search and check for items, things brought out of Mexico across the border there and see there's nothing legal was crossing in there. So we were sent down from the traffic bridge to the railroad bridge. Now the detachment of it was sent over there. In fact, the whole company was on guard duty over there, following me. And right next to us, they had a friend of mine, a good pal, we always ran together and shared everything alike. He saw this gorilla over there, big donkey, we called him Jack. And so I rode him around first, and then he rode him around. We was having such good fun. And the old Mexican, come out and try to make a stop. Of course, we couldn't understand any Spanish at all. So we stayed on him, and I happened to be on him in time. We got right to the edge of the river. There was nothing there but just a river, and just a little bank about 2.5-3 feet high from the river edge. And this guy jumped off into the river with me. Of course, I got back up on the bank, and I couldn't get him out, so we left. In the meantime, this old Mexican had gone to the commanding officer for the district, and they put us all under arrest, and it was awful hot that day, up around about 98. And they put us all under arrest in a big squad room under the railroad bridge. And I'll tell you, I thought the rest of our guys in that company was going to murder us before we got over that outfit. The next thing I can remember is we were on a march, fourth march from Eagle Pass to Spofford Junction. Quite a bit of difference, and we were supposed to hold maneuvers during the night there, weather warfare and training. and an old boy went out and caught a skunk. And I'm telling you, he started in there, and he just, I thought the fellow was going to kill him before he'd get rid of that skunk. And then we isolated him. The company come in and put him about a half mile behind us, maybe far behind us. So we come to a big pot of water up there, a lake. And we made him go in there and just soak himself good in that lake. And during the night, while we were in these little trenches we dig, some guy would pull a rope across in front of you just when you about half asleep or dozing. And it's a good thing we didn't have any live ammunition or somebody might have got hurt. And the one of the things I forgot to mention when we were doing duty up there on the ranch was that the rations only came to us once a week. And the fresh meat didn't last too long because we worked yet. So the lieutenant in command sent two of us out to hunt for a deer, see if we could find some fresh meat. So we spent past them early in the morning, late afternoon, over the desert there, just nothing but, well, you know what South Texas is along the border, cactus and mesquite bushes and a little of everything else, and rattlesnakes. So we hadn't run across any sign of a deer or any tracks. We checked up the two or three water mills over there, windmills rather, and started on the way back when we passed a big formation of rock. And as we went around that rock, out came a hog, which we thought, well, yeah, we've got something there to show. So we both cracked down on with our 30-30 Springfields. We killed him. We had a time dragging about a mile and a half before we got back into camp with him. And we were so proud of ourselves that we killed a wild hog. So the cook, none of them knew anything about the wild hog. So they scraped and cleaned on him. We cleaned him all out good. And they dug a pit there to try to barbecue him. So we couldn't cook him enough, and our camp stove in there. So he cooked on that old, it was found out it was old wild boar. And he cooked on that thing all night long, half the next day. And nobody could eat that thing at all, except. So we told him, made us, picked us, we killed him, so he made us go out and dig a hole and bury him. And that was the last of our hunting spree. He said, you can't kill anything better than that. Well, you better just stay in camp. Quit wasting ammunition. So that was one of our funny signs later on that we could reminisce about. Anyway, we continued on with our guard duties, checking the bar, continued on with our guard duties there, until World War I started. And after a couple of months, we were sent then back up through Tennessee into Greenville, South Carolina, where we had to build a new camp out of pine thickets up there. They were forest, rather. We wouldn't call them thickets, they're nothing but forest. And we spent the winter in there, 1917, because we went overseas in 1918, and sent us to Hoboken. We went on the Mauritania, around 9,000 of us, landed over in Liverpool, England. In Liverpool, we went across England to, I believe it was Winchester, and there we camped one day and took the boat across the channel, transport had to travel on at night. They couldn't travel during the day on account of bombing. And we landed at Le Havre. We went into a camp called Camp Ramsey. We trained too much before sending active duty at St. Mihiel. St. Mihiel, we traveled across then to Mount Pocahontas, which was in the Oregon Forest. I kind of got mixed up on that. I had to think back of some of the things that we went through in there. But I remember one of the funny things up there that happened. I was what they call a mountain scout. And that's between the front line infantry and back to the artillery. And we had a Texas Roan pony there. The ship there came from Texas. He had a Texas brand on him. And he couldn't do much fast running, but he was a pretty good jumper, and he could jump a trench with plenty to spare. He was the best jumper I ever rode. And one of the funny things I was going to mention was that coming from the Oregon Forest, I had to come across an open stretch that was maybe 300 yards wide. It was open to the enemy there where they could see, the Germans could see it from the sausage balloons they had up, called them observation balloons. And I was in a gallop coming across when they started throwing a few shells in my direction. And the pony wasn't seen to be traveling fast enough, me, so I just slid off the saddle onto the ground and out running into the woods up there. And my companions all up there said, that was one sight they'd never forget, man outruns a horse. And I tell you, if running saved me what I thought was saving me, I said, I'd run out running any time. After that, then we continued on to another place opposite Met, which we were supposed to capture from down November the 10th. But I had received word that the answers would be signed on the 11th. So we see if we had asked to cease fire at 8 o'clock the next morning. But then they continued to fire on us with mustard gas and high explosive shells up to exactly almost 11 o'clock before they ceased firing. And I remember we had an awful heavy fog that morning. And I remember that a great stillness came over that was just almost unbelievable. But nobody could believe itself after going through such terrific gunfire and shell fire that we had heard and gone through. And an hour or so later, after the ceasefire, the sun came out and we had birds for the first time in many months. And it was so uncanny that I don't know, we just have to kind of pinch ourselves to realize that it was all over with. So then we began the march to go towards Germany to occupy the Rhine River. And during our march we went up to Luxembourg. And while we were in Luxembourg they had a revolution. The Grand Duchess abdicated. And they took over and to make a republic out of it. The army consisted of about 200 policemen. It was called the army and the police force. And we were built there in Luxembourg for approximately a month. And then got asked to start return to France and be ready to ship back home. And we came all the way back then and debarked from St. Missouri on a little ship called Conning the Netherlands. It's only housed about 2,200 of us. 9,000 when we went over on the Mauritania and 2,200 on the way back on the Conning the Netherlands. And fortunately, we didn't have any bad weather. We went over in 6 days and took 14 days crossing from that. So we landed in Charleston, South Carolina. And everybody was so happy that when we pulled in the harbor, everybody rushed to one side and almost capsized the boat. The weight of everybody on one side slanted, broke to almost a 45 degree angle. And we were all yelling to get back on the other side and get back. Some of the men jumped off into the water, and we were just almost right at the docks when it happened. Everybody thought the fuel was going to sink right there. Going through that and then get home and then get down. But anyway, it all turned out all right. Boat rides itself and rides itself right in. So all debarked, and from then on it was praised until we all were demobilized in Elderport, Georgia in 1919, and